Welcome. I'd like to acknowledge the continuing sovereignty of all First Nations peoples right across the country. I'd also like to acknowledge elders, elders of the First Peoples of the land, and elders of more recent arrivals. Welcome to each and every one of you, and welcome to all our listeners tuned in across the country by the National Indigenous Radio Service and across the world by the World Wide Web. Welcome to you. It's great to have your company. Well, we've just come back from accepting or being the recipients of the inaugural Amnesty International Human Rights Media Awards. And yes, we entered the award and won the Indigenous category. Some pretty stiff competition in there. We were one of four finalists, we being Beamer Vision, and we entered our Let's Talk Decolonisation into the awards for consideration, and it took it out. It won the inaugural award in the Indigenous section for Amnesty International Human Rights Awards. So congratulations, team. We pull a lot of our radio people, we pull out, radio and training people, we pull them out offline into the studio to shoot these discussions. The last one you heard yesterday, our last production in the TV studio was Let's Talk Incarceration with Angela Davis and Mary Graham and Deb Kilroy and Professor Sharon, a lady from Canada. I can't even think of her name. I'm doing my apologies there. So that was shot and it's now up on YouTube. You can get it. Make sure you have a look. You can go to our website, bi989fm.com. I think all the W's. But you can go to our website and you'll find that one. It was played yesterday on this program and now the vision is there, so check it out. But congratulations to our team for the inaugural awards. It was a big one and like stiff competition. I think The Guardian was one of the finalists. I think it was the Sydney Telegraph, 7:30 report. So the big mainstream media, and it was this little under-resourced, very professional organisation that took out the category of Indigenous media. So congratulations, well done. I think it was fantastic. It was great to be down there to accept the award. Now my guest today, Torto Sainsbury from down south in Adelaide, right down the bottom of the country there. Uncle, welcome to the program. How are you?
Very good, Todd, and congratulations on your award also.
Thanks, Uncle. It's certainly quite significant award to be able to pick that one up in light of the finalists and the quality of these big multi-million dollar, mostly they'd be big budgeted organisations, well resourced and stuff. So it was great to have our product recognised, you know, our program recognised. Yeah. Tell us your mob, your country.
My mob is, I'm an Urunga man from the York Peninsula and Urunga Wurrungu. Wurrungu is the west coast of Sojourner, Coonabur region, and I live and work in Adelaide at the present moment.
All right. Whereabouts did you grow up?
I grew up in South Australia on Point Pierce Mission and in Adelaide, and a lot of time growing up in boys' homes. So, you know, like many of us right throughout Australia, you know, we've been through the same fate. But, yeah, I've managed to survive at the present moment.
All right. The boys' homes, was it Stolen Generation where the authorities took you, or what was the circumstances that led you into boys' homes?
I'm not sure. I ended up in a couple of boys' homes, me and my two brothers and my mum's brother and a few other cousins in the immediate family. And it had a lot to do with the welfare system of taking Aboriginal kids away. So, you know, unfortunately, I'm still a little unclear about how it happened. And so, you know, I still talk about it in the sense that it wasn't a good experience for me and it wasn't a good experience for my brothers. And unfortunately, both of my brothers that were with me has now passed on. Yeah, you know, right. Two older brothers and, you know, my sisters. So, yeah, it's still worries me a bit. I still think about it a bit and, you know, it's something that I most probably never find an answer to.
Mm-hmm. Okay. When did you become free of the clutches of the establishment?
I've been free of them for about 30 years.
How old would you have been? How old would you have been?
I started getting away from those people when I turned around 18, 19 years old, and I started changing my lifestyle, and that's where I am today. I started doing this right back in my younger years, not as proactive as I was back then, but I've learned a lot from a lot of good people along the way, and so I decided, you know, I continue to do it. I've said to my partner that I want to retire when I'm 70 years old, so I've got another 5 years to go, so if I can put another good 5 years into our communities right across Australia, and in particular where I am in South Australia, you know, I think I'll feel a better man and most probably die an happier one.
What is it that you hold close to your heart? What are your, I don't know, your aspirations, or what do you want to see? You've got another 5 years or so to go before you retire. What is it that you do, that you carry, that's especially, that's important to you?
My Aboriginality and the acknowledgement that, you know, it belongs to me, and it's not, and it doesn't belong to mainstream Australia, and it doesn't belong to government to control. And, you know, and I want to be a free Aboriginal man to decide my life and how my children should grow up and my grandchildren. And I don't want, you know, governments to decide that and look at me and say, you're a very dysfunctional person, as they are doing right across Australia to many Aboriginal people. And they continue to hold the clutches of, you know, controlling our lives. That was the way it was on Point Pierce, where I was brought up. You know, it used to be a big bell that would ring in the morning for us to get out of bed, and a bell would ring for us to go to bed, and a bell would ring for us to go to church. You know, because the missions had the churches there running them, and you know, and it was all about Christianity and God will save you, and if you talk your native tongue, you're an heathen. So, you know, it's all of those things that puts all this passion into myself as an Aboriginal man that wants to do something and try to, you know, help right the wrongs.
And what are your thoughts regarding government policies, the assimilationist policies that they introduced back in the early 1900s, and they're still bringing them in, still trying to impose assimilationist policies on us? What are your thoughts about that?
Like I said, you know, I believe in my Aboriginality, and that should remain. And I think there are many Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people right across Australia that believe in that. And assimilation is a bad word for us. It's a bad meaning, and it means a lot of more. We would lose a lot more than Australia, and Australia would gain a lot more from our losses. And it would put us in a worse predicament than what we are at this present moment. So, you know, excuse me. So assimilation, I don't like. You know, I believe in Aboriginal people, and I believe in their right to be free. And you know, that's one of the policies that I don't want to see. And if we've got to march against it, you know, I'd march against it.
Yeah. Yes. All right. Now, well, reflecting back over time, over different policies you've seen introduced, progression by our mob, establishing community-controlled agencies like legal and health and childcare and housing and stuff, looking back over the years and looking at some of the where we are today, 2014, 21st century, how do you feel about things? We've got some gains, we've got some losses, there's some great achievements. Well, how do you feel?
I think for me down in South Australia, I think we've come to a standstill in moving forward. And it's got a lot to do with the bad policies and legislation that is written, and, you know, the removal of funding that, you know, makes a very disadvantaged community. You know, I was just listening to you just a while ago when you were talking about the incarceration. And, you know, it's massively high right across Australia. And the only way that we're going to deal with that is if we have good organisations, good Aboriginal organisations deal with Aboriginal people the way they should be. Not these mainstream organisations and all of these, what we call down South Australia, is care bear organisations that want to do everything right for Aboriginal people. I know, you know, and so does my community know down in South Australia what they want and what they believe in. It's breaking those shackles and, you know, this motherhood feeling from governments that they're the parents and we're the children and we're bad, so they've got to do things to us. And what they're doing now is taking more of our Aboriginal children away. It's another stolen generation discussion that we're having down in South Australia and across Australia. You know, we've got something like 14,000-15,000 Aboriginal kids that have taken away to this current moment, at this current moment. So, you know, does that make us bad people, or is there bad policies and legislations, and then is there an hidden agenda behind everything that they're doing to us? I think there is an hidden agenda, and we've got to just make sure that we get smarter and stronger and unite as one community across Australia, because it's important. It doesn't matter where we come from. We're all Aboriginal people, and we're being, you know, basically tarred with the same brush, as if we're, you know, we're a dysfunctional community. Mm. Unfortunately, I don't believe in that.
Mm. Mm. What do you think the hidden agenda is? Land grab, mining, controlling our mob, we're taking away our basic human rights? What do you think the hidden agenda is here?
I think it's everything that you said has taken away the basic human rights. It is a land grab. We have, Australia is a rich country, and it's rich for everybody else except Aboriginal people, and that's the way that the governments want to keep it and the mining industry want to control it. But we've got to get smarter, you know, and how we're going to do that, we've got to work that out, because I know we're not dumb. I know we are smart people. It's just that I'm working a lot down in South Australia on the Andrew Forrest report. It's South Australia and every part of Australia. And I'm working with a young guy called Paz Forgione, who does a lot of work for us in income management. And we're trying to talk to the South Australian government. Unfortunately, Premier Jay Weatherall and the Aboriginal Affairs Minister, Mr. Ian Hunter, and absolutely refuses to talk to me because I have an Aboriginal point of view, and that makes it more difficult. And they select who they want to talk to, and many of those people that they select in our community say the words that government wants to hear. So, you know, we have a problem and we have fight on our hands.
Mm-hmm. When you say you're working on the Twiggy Forrest review, what's it called? Creating parity. What are your thoughts? What are your concerns there? What jumps out at you? How do you feel about it? Are there some things in there that are quite useful? Are there things in there that are just downright outrageous? How do you feel about it? I've never seen it. I've heard about it. There's been plenty of discussion about
it. I think there's things in there that are outright outrageous. You know, the cashless welfare cards that they want to introduce. Our government down in South Australia is the only Labor government in Australia, and yet Premier Jay Weatherall has endorsed it, and he said that he's one of the most innovative reports that he's seen. Unfortunately, you know, he most probably hasn't read the Royal Commission into Aboriginal Deaths in Custody either. But, you know, I'm concerned that there's sort of an hidden agenda in there in relation to the mining industry and land grab, and I think that was a major conflict of interest with Tony Abbott appointing Twiggy Forrest to do the report, because he's a mining magnate, you know, and he's a multi-millionaire, and there's major concerns in that. We've just received a report back that, you know, the income management of people on welfare cards is not working. It hasn't worked, and, you know, it's just been released from the federal government. So yet they still want to pursue and persist with these things that's not working in our community.
Mm.
We had CDEPs, Community Development Employment Programs. They were good for Aboriginal communities. They want to reintroduce working for the dole, but in a different fashion. Not sure, because I haven't had discussions with them, and I don't think I'll ever get to discuss these things with them because of the way that they're carrying on. So I think the Twiggy Forrest report is a big danger for Aboriginal Australia.
Our national advisory, well, it's not ours. It's Abbott's. Abbott being the Prime Minister for Indigenous People, he's got his own little group of people that he set up as advisors, a National Aboriginal Advisory Council. What are your thoughts? Do they represent your views at all? What are your thoughts?
Absolutely not. And everybody that I've spoken to in South Australia says exactly the same thing. Warren doesn't represent our views. It's already been mentioned that committee is totally dysfunctional. They've been operating for the last 12 months. They've not delivered one thing to the Aboriginal community. I've spoken to Warren on a couple of occasions, and Warren has already advised me that he works for the Prime Minister and not the committee or not the community, and he reports direct to the Prime Minister. I personally see, if there's such an advisory body, it should report to the Federal Minister for Indigenous Affairs, and that we should be dealing with that. I don't think that they should be appointed. I think they should be selected from around Australia to create a national Aboriginal representative body. And the appointment of Warren Mundine and, you know, Marcia Langdon doing business and coming into South Australia without acknowledging or speaking to any one of us is for us, a slap in the face also.
Mm-hmm. We do have a nationally, an elected body, being the National Congress for Aboriginal People. What are your thoughts there? Is there ways that maybe that could be tweaked and given a little more power? Or how do you feel about Congress, considering that they've also been defunded? They've only got a few years left, or they've got a bit of some reserves there that they can carry them through for a little while. But there is people who are elected by their own mob, although it be a small membership.
Well, that's right. And for me, I'm not totally in favour of Congress in the way that it's set up. Congress has picked its members, and I'm one of them. I nominated to find out exactly what Congress can deliver. I went to a meeting in Brisbane, and I left there disappointed, and I made a decision that I was going to resign because I didn't find any connection to community in relation to that. And I found the selection of the both chairpersons, you know, was another thing that should have had a bigger discussion. And unfortunately, yes, it has been defunded, and they've got some cash left in the bank to keep them going for, I think, 2 or 3 more years. But a true representative body means that, for me, they should be selected from each state and territory and form a national representative body that should inform governments of what's right and what's wrong in their communities.
Mm. Similar to the old ATSIC structure?
Well, I had no problems with the ATSIC structure. We had something like 27 councils right across Australia. You know, the commissioners were in place. In my discussions, when I knew that ATSIC was going down the tube and they asked my opinion, I gave an opinion that if the commissioner was going to be moved out, that they should leave the 27 councils. The 27 chairpersons could have made up a national representative forum for the federal government. We had 3 regional councils in South Australia that operated effectively, and they used to inform the state government. So, you know, the ATSIC model was good. A lot of people said it wasn't, but And it was reviewed for misappropriation of funds on each occasion. They found that there was no misappropriation of funds. So, you know, the ASIC model was good, but I don't think anybody would want to go back to the ASIC model.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Let's take a break for a song and come back. I want to talk to you about a proposal that you've floated and talking to people across the country, being a national summit of First Nations peoples, the Summit for Freedom. Tordas Hansbury is talking to me, and we're talking about the issues. All right, we're back on air. So, and if anybody wants to make a call or a comment and put something up, 3892 0188 07, of course, if you're ringing from interstate, 3892 0188. Now, Uncle, tell me, the Summit for Freedom, what do you envisage that to be, and what's the need for it? What's driving you to make this proposal and to try and organise for mob to be coming together?
Well, I think what's driving me to achieve this is to get our mob to come together and talk about all of the issues right across Australia, what's affecting us. And I think once we start doing that, everybody will find that we've basically got the same problem, because it's coming from a government that wants to, I believe, totally dismantle Aboriginal affairs across Australia. And I think we need to discuss it, and I think we need to put a point to the government that, you know, this is totally unacceptable and we won't accept it.
Hmm. And the proposal is that it be held where and when?
The proposal is the end of next month, November, in Alice Springs. And one of the reasons why that is because the intervention started in the Northern Territory. And I thought it would be much more central for everybody else to come from every part of Australia to, you know, all head to the centre of Australia and talk about this issue.
All right. And you've spoken to other people around. Who have you spoken to, and what's been the responses?
I've had good responses from right around Australia and different people that I've rung. Unfortunately, I haven't got the list with me, but... Mm. You know, I've spoken to Sam Watson, who absolutely agrees that this should happen. I've spoken to Lyle and Jenny Munro from New South Wales. I've spoken to Western Australia, people from Western Australia and the Northern Territory. I've actually rung and spoke to Rosemary Kernoth-Monk, who's, you know, absolutely delighted and over the hill that something like this is going to happen, and happening in the Northern Territory. And I've spoken to many of my own community about it in South Australia. And for me, I think, you know, it's something that has not happened for many, many years, and I think this is the right time where it should happen. I mean, when we look at both persuasions of government, there's not much friendliness within the government for Aboriginal people and Aboriginal issues, and really we've got to push our point of view, and we've got to push our own agenda. And I'm actually sitting in an organisation in Adelaide called Aboriginal Family Support Services, and there's on the wall the United Nations and the Declaration of Aboriginal Children on their wall, and I'm doing cultural awareness training down here with the staff, and I've just broken so I can speak to you. So I honestly believe that this is the time and the right time that we should do that, because I think if it doesn't happen next month, I can't see when it's going to happen again.
Yes, no, there is a sense of urgency about coming together, that's for sure, because the issues out there are starting to just, we're getting snowed under. We're under attack. There's no question about being under attack right across the country.
We are.
Yeah. Yes, no, and we certainly do need to be coming together and talking. Any community discussions, any on-the-ground community forums, get-togethers, things like that happen down there in your area where people are talking about what's bothering them, or they're busy just trying to survive?
A lot of them are busy trying to survive, but what I've done, I'm working with six young Aboriginal people, and I'm talking about younger. Very good. We even meet on Sundays to talk about the issues that's happening at a state and federal level. And one of those young kids that's working with me is Gary Foley's son, young Rockley Foley. Intelligent, passionate young lad. And then there are about five or six other young lads. We put on a forum last Thursday with something like 80 people rocked up and listened to that, and different nationalities as well as Aboriginal people. A couple of months before that, we had 250 turn up, because we continue to talk about all of the things that is happening in Aboriginal affairs. I'm in the process, and I will do most probably before or after the summit, is asking our Labor government, who's been in power for the last 10 years, to provide the Aboriginal community with a report card on what they've done and what they've achieved. I know that'll go down like a lead balloon, but, you know, it's something that I need to ask this government.
Yes, there'll probably be a big mob of D's for failure, I would imagine, because there's not too many things that they've achieved when it looks at First Nations affairs.
Well, that's right. That's right. And unfortunately, like many governments around Australia, you know, they pick an area that they focus on a lot and try to achieve their, make their achievements out of that one community. And unfortunately, it leaves many other Aboriginal communities behind. And that's what's happening down south.
Mm. Yes. No, it's happening right across the board. State governments aren't friendly. Federal government's not friendly. Local governments are not all that friendly.
Yeah.
They're a bunch of mean-spirited bunch, whether it's local, state or federal. They're a mean-spirited bunch from my experience and observations.
Well, they are. Mm. They are. And, you know, it's about, I think one of the things that we've got to do is educate the young so, you know, they can continue on in the battle. And honestly, I wish there wasn't a battle. I think, well, I wish that, you know, people would come and policies would change, because they know that they're wrong, what they're doing. But I think it's all got to do with, you know, the business of making a lot of money out of Aboriginal communities and Aboriginal land, and, you know, leaving Aboriginal people behind at the end of the day. So, you know, we've got a big fight ahead. Yeah, we have. And I hope to live to see a great outcome one day, a great achievement for us as Aboriginal people right across Australia.
What would constitute that great achievement? What do you think? What would be the best thing, or even, I don't think we could ever get the best thing that we're due, that is rightfully ours, but what might constitute a great achievement? Would it be, I don't know, legislated national land rights? What would it be?
Well, I think most probably that. I think sovereignty. Mm. One of the things that, you know, we talk about a lot is treaties, and I think treaties should be a national agenda that they should seriously talk about. You know, the Maoris in New Zealand has got it. You know, the Canadian Indians have got it. All, you know, different indigenous tribes around the world are achieving treaties and achieving a better outcome, but Australia seems to be lagging behind, and they're resisting a lot in relation to what they should be doing. One of the things in South Australia, we have a thing called the Letters Patent, and I was talking to a politician only yesterday, and I asked him... And I asked him straight out, you know, the Letters Patent is a legal document. He said it is, but it'll never get a look in Parliament.
Mm.
It'll never get a look in. The Letters Patent gave protection and this is the way it was written, gave protection to the natives of South Australia, that no land should be taken away or lost without compensation and negotiation. That didn't happen. What was done was total theft. Mm. And our current Premier knows that, but it will never be debated in government because there's a liability attached to it.
Mm. The letters patent, that's that's something that was signed off back in the 1800s or so. Tell us a little about.
That was signed off by King William IV in relation to the settlement of South Australia. And like I said, it basically said that no native of South Australia will be disadvantaged from the colonisation of South Australia and that no natives will lose their land. And that is the founding document of South Australia. There were four commissioners set up by the King, four commissioners for colonisation of South Australia, and they were supposed to adhere to the letters patent. Unfortunately, they didn't. It was a massive land grab and theft, you know, murder, removal of Aboriginal people off their land, driven them onto missions. So the letters patent for us is a legal document and is something that we continue to discuss and try to get state governments to talk about implementing, or we take it back to England and give it to the British government and say, you created this, now you should fix it.
Honour it.
And yeah.
Mm, they should honour that.
That's right.
Yes. Yes. And they're still removing our mob. Look at those communities over in the West and maybe in South Australia, but I do know of some that's come through in the media, Northern Territory communities over in the West, communities over there. They're just moving people off their communities, off country, and then coming in and demolishing the homes that they live in and creating, not relocating people, but adding to the burden of homelessness. They're still removing our mob against their will.
Yeah. Yeah, and they're allowed to do, and they're allowed to do that.
Mm.
You know, well, they shouldn't be allowed to do it in the sense that they believe they're allowed to do that, and that's wrong. You know, Australia signed up to the United Nations. Yeah, you know, they don't believe in the rights of Aboriginal people, Australia. They don't believe that we have rights and we should have rights. They believe that we should be incarcerated. They believe in the genocide of Aboriginal people. Even though people like John Howard had said genocide never happened, it has, you know, and it's continuing to happen today. You know, and it's not just genocide, it's cultural genocide. They want to kill off our culture, our customs, our tradition. They want to remove everything that's Aboriginal on this planet so there's nothing else to talk about. And then one morning people will wake up and say, you know, the Dreamtime story now is only a Dreamtime story.
Yeah, yeah. I thought it was interesting. I mean, these governments, state and federal governments, but particularly federal governments, have this very similar attitude towards asylum seekers. And I thought it was an interesting outcome. Well, I thought it was downright criminal, the decision at in a court that young baby that came across here while his mum was pregnant, she was an asylum seeker on a boat or something. He was, and he was born here in this country, and they questioned his citizenship because the law states if you're born in this country, you're automatically a citizen. But their determination was that he was an illegal maritime arrival. And my thoughts are, from where I'm sitting, well, there's another probably close on 23 million illegal maritime arrivals out there, but they don't see that way. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, this is the whole thing about the federal government. You know, they can make up the laws to make themselves happy, you know, and they're absolutely criticising and victimising a young Aboriginal or young kid that has just been born in Australia that doesn't know what's going on, but they don't want to give that child protection.
Mm.
You know, and I don't really know how these people could sleep at night. Honestly, there must be one thing that, to be a politician, you've got to have no conscience. And I don't think they've got a conscience about humanity or the protection of any person. You know, whether you're, you know, an illegal immigrant, whether you are a boat person, an asylum seeker, or even Aboriginals, they don't seem to have a conscience. and yet they go and they sit in church, and you know, they're absolute hypocrites.
Mm.
And that's how I look at them. They're hypocrites. That they go and pray, yet they do the opposite thing to humanity.
Mm.
You know, and they're quite willing to destroy it for their own purpose. I'm glad that I'm born an Aboriginal person, because if there's such a thing as a second life and I come back again, I want to come back as an Aboriginal person to finish off what I started.
You wouldn't be anything but, eh?
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. I wouldn't want to be anything else but an Aboriginal.
Mm. What do we do as First Nations people? You're calling for the Summit for Freedom next month in Alice Springs. What do we do on the ground as First Nations people, as the original sovereign owners of this country? What do we do in our own backyards, in our own communities, in our own family homes? What are some of the things we can do where we're not dependent on a Nigel Scullion decision or a Warren Mundine decision or an Abbott decision? What do you think? What are some of the things we can do as First Nations peoples?
I think as First Nations people, it's got to come. We've got to absolutely reunite as a First Nations people. And if it means that we've got to go to and do that out of our own pocket, find our own way to get there, we need to do that, because while we stand, as we sit at this present moment divided, we're easy targets, we're easy pickings, you know. And I would like to see a united First Nations people that can support what is happening in Western Australia, where they were removed off their land and they're ours as bulldozed. This is our land for over 70, 80, 100,000 years. This is our land, and we're being victimized, crucified, ostracized, you know, and at the end of the day, it comes into genocide. It all happens along those lines. We need to unite as one community and say, you know, enough's enough. If we need to sit down and protest, sit down and protest, because we have to do something, and we have to get the attention of the international world, because these people are doing this to us without no attention from the international world, and we need to unite as one.
Yeah, we certainly seem to be on our own here in this one, don't we? There are some good supporters out there from settler society, but the numbers are very small. The numbers are small with amongst our own mob, and the numbers are small with those of settler society that do support us.
And that's right. We've got down in South Australia, you know, I'm working with a lot of good non-Aboriginal people. We've got to convince one another in our own community to put aside our own little arguments and fight for the greater good of Aboriginal Australia. As traditional owners, we've got to separate this thing that is a big discussion right across Australia, lateral violence. We've got to stop attacking one another and start attacking the oppressors, the people that oppress us on a daily basis. You know, we've got to start pointing the finger at them and saying, you know, enough's enough. Now, I wasn't put on this planet for you to kick in the gut 7 days a week. Now, I come from an Aboriginal culture that's strong. It has good customs and traditions, and you want to kill all of that off. Well, unfortunately, the only way you can kill that off is by killing me, and that's what they're doing. So we need good, strong, united community to protect our community and to protect our kids and our grandchildren that's growing up, because they're going to be faced with this. We need to set a solid foundation for them to carry on and improve, you know, Aboriginal Australia.
Yeah, that's for sure. All right, Unc. Anything else you want to add in winding up?
No, I just thank you very much for the call, Tiger. But, you know, for those that are listening, you know, if you're really interested in saving your community, come to Alice Springs, end of the month, end of November, because it's a time that we united and it's a time that we started fighting back.
Very good, Unc. Well, we'll talk again. We'll talk some more. You keep up the great work, and we'll talk again.
I'll see you in Alice, brother.
Let's hope we're able to pull it off and we all get there, yep.
Yeah, okay. Bye, thank you.
Bye now. Torto Sansbury, old uncle from over there in Adelaide, trying his hardest to mobilise people, to organise people. Manfred calls, while that song was running, thanks for your call, Manfred. Manfred suggested a lobby group. You know, it's time that there's all these different mining lobbies and pastoralist lobbies and different sorts of lobby groups. We should be First Nations people's lobby group, which may be one of the outcomes of this Summit for Freedom to be held, proposed for Alice Springs next month. There certainly is some, I think there's some benefit in that, some merit in the suggestion of a lobby group. If we could get ourselves together and organise and start lobbying. We do have some of the bigger organisations that have the budgets and funds to maybe assist and facilitate one such thing, a lobby group. So we'll see what happens. You join me tomorrow for Let's Talk.